Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and blessings, and welcome to another installment of the Gist of Freedom Estate. This show is produced by acclaimed historian, educator, and author Leslie Gist, and serves as our weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African-American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who, with faith and focus, are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. We thank you for joining us tonight, and we'd love you to be a part of tonight's discussion by calling in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552.
This is PJ, CEO of Brown Eyes Publishing Group and Brown Eyes Company. Been publishing since 2007. Publications are Brown Eyes Magazine, Behind the Scenes Magazine, and For Haiti Magazine. We put together this movie and discussion night for the movie premiere, Lincoln, a movie describing the account of Abraham Lincoln and his role, the freeing of slaves in this country. I thought it was very important historically for us to explore this movie in its larger context. Hello, Daniel, did you come in? Are you in, Daniel?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes. So I was just basically introducing myself on the show. Again, my name is TJ, and I'm a publisher, CEO of Brown Eyes Publishing Group. Thank you, Daniel, for being on and for interviewing me for this segment of the show. We went to see Lincoln tonight, which was a historical account of exactly what happened when the Emancipation Proclamation was signed, and then later on, the 13th Amendment was made to the Constitution.
I haven't seen the film. It just so happened that I had some personal obligations to attend to. I mean, I'm a history buff myself. What I'm more concerned with than anything else, because I know with Hollywood, you know, they're trying to tell stories. They never really focus on the whole story, but a fraction of the story. I wanted to know how historically balanced it was. I mean, what would you say? Would you say
what's
historically balanced as a film?
Well, I know that there's always going to be some dramatics when you're talking about cinema. I think that they did their best in terms of really encapsulating the sentiment, the emotion, what people were going through and what their point of view were at that time in this country. It was very much a strong patriarchal country where the white man's rule of law was just the word and nothing else could come into that. And even though people had different opinions, the main sentiment of the country at this time was for white men to keep power. So you saw a lot of their insecurities coming out. And I appreciated that point that the movie made, because it does go into the emotions that people are even feeling up until today. And I think anybody that would see that feels that way could watch that movie and say, wow, you know, these people were really, you know, ignorant and out of touch, and maybe see something in themselves that they might want to change. So I appreciated the movie, but in the larger context of what happened, they didn't do a good job in terms of portraying other people that were a part of the struggle, portraying especially Frederick Douglass's role. And a lot of people have made that criticism about the film and actually prevented a lot of people from seeing the film and really appreciating the other things that it has to offer, like I mentioned previously. So it's one of those bittersweet kind of things. It was great to see them really analyze and critique that area, that era in history, and bring it into the present. But what it lost really brought the movie down. I really think they could have done a better job. But it is Steven Spielberg, so it's going to have a certain kind of whitewash layer about it.
They don't want to over-intellectualize or over-dramatize stories to the point where... the other person I would like to have seen is Vice President Andrew Johnson, who, mm-hmm. most of his life, was against the abolitionist of slaves.
But I think your assessment is right. One thing I saw in the film is that it really focused on Lincoln and really made him the hero of that era. And they portrayed him from before, even before this movie, they always portray him as a pensive thinker. You know, he was true to his values. And that's what they really wanted to show, I believe, in the film. And they accomplished that goal. You know, he was very solid, unmovable. He knew from the very beginning of the movie, it showed that he had a goal and he had a plan and he wanted to execute it. And he did so really by any means necessary kind of format. I don't want to spoil the film for you and for other people that haven't seen it. It's only been out one night. But he was really relentless. One of the quotes that I remembered from it, he said that he was working with all three of his ears open. I thought they would have said eyes, but I guess, you know, it's more of a cultural thing. But he made mention and hinted towards, you know, kind of like a sixth sense, you know, that sense in yourself that will always tell you when something is right. And he was destined, if you want to look at it in a larger context and bring it into spirituality and bring it into destiny and how things are supposed to unfold. There are a lot of players that, you know, are against what the universe wants, against what the Almighty Creator wants, and they go off and they're able to, by whatever means they have, to accomplish their goals. But there's always those people that are destined to do certain things, and he was one of them, and he knew it. And he did it, like I said, by any means necessary. He has to go against a lot of people in this party. He has to go against people in his cabinet, his close comrades, and even people in his family, because in the film, I don't know how historically accurate it was, but I would assume that it was that even his wife was trying to discourage him from moving forward. And probably, too, well, actually, what they were saying to him, the exact language was, you know, to protect his reputation. It was in his second term, and he was almost completed with his second term, and so it really wasn't a need for him to do that in terms of, okay, he wanted to get votes, he wanted to gain more political power. He was in the right place. He had done well, and people respected him, and people loved him. So he really didn't have any other reason to do it but just to stick by his principles and understand and know the right things to do. And he went up against a lot of people and actually paid with his life in the end, ultimately, because there's no denying that he was assassinated for that reason. And there's been a lot of people that put their life on the line, paid with their life and paid with other things. Yes, they did a lot of things wrong. Like we were stating before, a lot of people did not want to see the film because of the lack of black characters involved, the lack of black, just even giving them credit for the work that they did. There was a lot of shortcomings, but in terms of what they set out to do, the intentions that they had with the film, they definitely succeeded in that, and it was really to show Lincoln's role in this, and they really idealized him through the film, which they have done before throughout history. This is not anything new. This is just another version of it.
Well, I mean, that sounds very good, and Lincoln was certainly a great man. I mean, we don't even have to say that. He's worth much of the praise he's been given, you know, historically, and even with his role in American lore, American
right.
culture as a whole, even pop culture. You know, I mean,
glad that you bring in lore. That I don't mean to cut you off, but I want to hit on that point. In the discussion of on the event page that we put up on Facebook, someone pointed out that they also released another movie this year on Lincoln, but it portrayed him as like this weird vampire slayer. He's like going around slaying Bucky.
Yeah, I heard about it.
You know what I mean? It's so weird that they would put the, you know, two movies out on Lincoln the same year, and one of them be that he was saying Bucky. I think it was very interesting in terms of lore and folklore that they wanna present in this country. And Lincoln is just one of those figures that they cannot get enough of. And it does speak to this country and what this country is about. And it is about freedom, you know. One of the biggest quotes in terms of liberty to come out of this country is give me liberty or give me death. And people were so serious about that in this country because they had their own challenges to face even, you know, before facing the internal challenges. And Lincoln being one of those figures, they're always going to idealize him. They're always going to find newer ways to reinvent him so that we don't forget what this country has to go through for it to be what it is today. And there are people in every generation that want to see better for not only themselves, but for everyone. And but it's just this whole vampire thing. Like, I don't really understand why they would want to, like, I don't know who saw that, but, you know, who the thinking behind making a vampire, you know, it just seems to me that they were trying to see something in terms of his power and what could happen if people empower themselves. That's how I took it. I don't know how anybody else, maybe we could see that movie and have a discussion about it after as well. But also I want to point out that this particular movie, we did see it at the Regal Cinema Theater in Union Square, and the demographic was primarily, I want to say 90% of the people were white, and they were between the ages of like 21 and 30. Those are the people, and it was sold out, by the way. They had two showing at the 7 o'clock, the one that we wanted to see. And it was sold out by 5 o'clock. And when I was leaving, it was 2.5 hours long. When I was leaving, the next one that was about to show was for 10:30, and it was a line of people, same demographic, lined up to see this movie. And one other thing I want to point out at the end, they did. And sorry to spoil the movie for anybody that didn't see it. They did show the assassination at the end, and after they showed that he passed on, There was like a final speech on liberty, on, you know, the rights of man and how people should be treated. And people clapped at the end. And it's the first time I've heard any type of clapping in a theater, you know. So it was very surprising to me. And I'm actually kind of wanting to see the vampire depiction.
And wow. It's also, me personally, I like to extract the man from the legend. And from what I understand in my research and, you know, my exposure to history is that Lincoln, like Jefferson, like Washington, like of course, all of these four men are brought on Mount Rushmore, he was a man of his time. And I said that I said that to be very much ambiguous, because the time which Lincoln lived varied from that of which Jefferson lived. Thomas Jefferson was a man of his time in the sense that having educated wealthy white males, such as Mr. Johnson, Andrew Johnson, who, although not liking black people, ultimately graduated, I guess, for lack of a better term, that black be liberated, black be emancipated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a black man, I must say I'm grateful that he acted in a way that favored the emancipation of blacks. But nonetheless,
right,
it was so much based on his own admiration for us as a people per se.
No, they never portrayed that in the movie. That was never discussed.
Okay.
Which is weird. Yeah, that never came out of his mouth. What really came out was that he was just focused on a goal, and he knew it was the right thing to do. He was conflicted because there was a lot of things happening. There was a civil war with people that wanted to secede from the Union for economic reasons, and then it kind of seemed like the slavery issue took a secondary seat to that one. But what he wanted to make sure was that he had already put the Emancipation Proclamation in by the time when we came into the movie. Like, this is, you know, talking from the viewpoint of what the movie was presenting. So he had a big crisis on his hand. It was a very delicate situation to make sure that if the proclamation that he put in place was then enforced within the state and still get them to be a part of the Union. So he had two things that he wanted to accomplish, and it was not easy. And that's what the film was really showing, that particular crucial fine tight rope that he had to walk to get both the other people's opinion, negative opinions about Negroes, definitely, like I said, was displayed. But that never came. That never came out. And so that scripting, we have to wonder why they never made Lincoln profess that. Think that it would have been, you know, it would have given a movie historically relevant. It is now, being that right after this election, this recent election where Obama was reelected, there has been people in about 18 states now that have put a petition on the White House website to secede from the Union. And I thought that this movie was put out in a strategic time. I would have liked to have seen it before the election, but being that they put it out so close after the election, it kind of makes you wonder, and it's so ironic, it's really eerie that people are wanting to see from the Union again, you know, from a similar issue. They don't want to be behind an integrated, you know, fully holistic country. And, you know, no matter what year, what time, and whatever we're in this country, it's always a struggle for our reasonations. And praise God, there has been a lot of progress for our people in this country, but it really, really surface on the surface. So I'm curious to see how that's going to play out, and what is he going to do, if he has to do anything, if he has to take any political action against that, and what would become of this country. I think that if people had seen this film prior to the election, they would understand what people went through, how much blood was shed, how much pain was endured to get the country to this point that it is now.
Well, this whole thing about succeeding the Union, and I doubt if it's ever going to come to any light, especially given some of the states involved. We have as far north as the Washington State and as far south down as Florida. I mean, imagine having a huge stretch between California and New York geographically, where America's going to look like, I don't know, it looks awkward.
I mean, unless they start taking up arms. Like, I mean, come on. You know, people in this country love their firearms, and it wouldn't be the first time people went on a rampage because they were upset about, you know, one thing or the other. These people, you know, people in this country are dangerous. They're crazy idealistic. You think Middle East, you know, people are extreme. Like, people here are extreme.
Okay, with the level of armament that this country's government has But
what
you know,
can we do next?
It ain't gonna happen.
No, it definitely won't. But it's just it's gonna go down in history. You know, this is history being made every day, and the fact that you know so many states they have enough signatures on the petition. You know, by the Constitution, stated by the White House website in terms of when they will take legal and political action on any petition that is introduced onto the site. It says something about the people in this country, who they are. I rarely put myself in that bunch in saying we. Who Americans are, who they are, and what they stand for, what their values are. And on one hand, there's enough people to like Obama, you know, at an easy margin. And then there also are enough people that have enough hate and racism in their heart to want to have their own country. And I believe that they are serious about it because that's recorded. Their name, your actual name, has to be on the petition. So there's a certain sentiment of people that weren't afraid to let their voice be heard, in that respect, and how they really felt about Obama, and they're really saying how they feel about Black people, how they feel about all kind of people, you know, non-white people, and I think it's sad. I think that it is gonna stain the American history again, in terms of how. It has been progressing so far. It's like 10 steps forward and then like 8 back, you know, and it's always going to be that limbo here because and everybody's a free thinker. Anybody can, you know, think and feel the way that they want to. And unfortunately, hate gets passed down from generation to generation. And there hasn't really been a conscious effort to address those things. It's only now that you see a lot of Black people on TV. It's only now you see a lot of Black people in politics. It's only now that you're seeing Black people in respected roles in culture and in society, not only here but around the world, which makes a difference. So our politics here affects people around the world and vice versa. And so, you know, just bringing it full circle about what the movie entailed and what the movie represented in this time, at that time in history, and them bringing out the movie and this time and what's happening, I think is very relevant. And I think that we have to be careful. And I think that the federal government should address it and publicly make a statement on it to let them know, hey, this is not something that will ever succeed. And I actually think it's a disrespect. And we know how Obama gets down with disrespect. You don't really take it lightly. And I think that he should address it. And just want to make one more point. We're in Think Coffee right now. They're actually flicking the lights on and off on us. So it is time for us to go. But if everyone can go to Brown Eyes Publishing Group on Facebook or browneyespubgroup.com, which is our website, you can find out more about our publications and the work that we do. You can contact me, PJ. My email address is pj@browneyesmag.com, and that's what it's me, pj@browneyesmag.com.
Hello, this is Leslie Gist, the producer of The Gist of Freedom. I just wanted to include the next excerpt of a conversation we overheard while our show was being recorded about the Lincoln film. And while we were recording our show, there was a group of young white women from NYU discussing the Young Republican Party. And I just want you to take a listen. Thank you.
Here at Think Coffee, talking about the probability of this whole election changing the Republican Party in a way that will be very interesting for our generation to track and think about over the next 20 or so years. And so we've been talking about the idea is that there's a whole young generation of Republicans who could actually someday appeal to, you know, a group of young, 19-year-olds like we are sitting in a coffee shop talking about, you know, how humans have a need for equal rights and that we all have, you know, just basic human needs, like, you know,
yeah.
right, equal rights to marriage and everything. And
right,
so,
essentially, like, balancing out the kind of social issues that we talk about that kind of seem, like, I guess more like commonplace among liberals about, like, yeah, gay marriage and just kind of things that are more common among our younger generation, which would make it mostly about the economic issues, like in terms of the Republican Party versus, like, the Democratic Party would be mostly economic. But I feel like we were also talking about how new social issues would arise within more level playing field, because the playing field's never going to be any kind of level on any real level.
Well, and that's the thing, is I feel like in the next 30 years, Fox News will no longer, it'll either no longer exist or it'll have completely gone through a radical shift in any kind of doctrine or philosophy that they show. So it's interesting because it's just interesting that, you know, one day all of these Republicans, and, you know, with all of us being raised and, you know, being coming of age in the Bush years,
yeah.
whenever, you know, you've got this whole idea of let's enforce the doctrine of, well, if you're poor and, like, having, you know, if you feel disenfranchised, it's your fault, you need to work harder.
Right.
And that will no longer be a thing.
Right. And I feel like that's a long way down the road, like, because we are, I don't know, like, I mean, all of these is really ideal. I mean, thinking about the long-term kind of future, but then there's we were just talking about, like, the 2016 election, which I don't know if all of these things are going to be happening by then, but, like, yeah, we do have this kind of new rise of, like, a kind of younger Republican Party that might be a little bit different, but by the 2016 election, what were our predictions about that? We're talking about Hillary, how it's probably going to come down to Hillary Clinton and Chris Christie, or
and
we're
then
also
maybe
talking about
Jeb Bush.
Right, yeah, Jeb Bush, how it's a possibility, how, like, the GOP might come down to Jeb Bush versus Chris Christie, and now that Chris Christie's come out after Sandy, and he was supporting Obama, and he seemed a little bit more moderate, how that will either win him the election or lose him the primary,
Something that's interesting, that, you know, it would be interesting to propose is the idea that that Chris Christie, because he kind of came out in this very, like, bipartisan way, that he might be able to kind of, like, collate all the support of this, like, younger generation of Republicans who are not kind of stuck in this Tea Party mentality, and might be able to revolutionize the party and lead a whole
that's
new
true.
Movement with
that's
the party
actually
and make
true
it.
That it's a possibility, but I don't know if it would amount to enough people compared to just, like, still traditional people. I mean, like, it's only 4 years down the road. It's not like everyone who has this, like, old traditional value of Republicanism is really gone. So I feel like, I don't know if it will. I mean, I definitely think it's going to get them revved up, and it's going to get this kind of, like, new voter out there who's, like, a young Republican who has maybe a little bit more moderate social ideals. But I don't know if that will be enough to get him to even, like, the main election. Like, I don't know how statistically it'll work out. So we'll see.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, is it's very idealistic at this point to be saying, like, by 2016 we can make all these changes. Because I'm just, you know, even going in the past 4 years, going from this election, I feel like with the election night, Obama actually did deliver on these campaign slogans from 4 years ago of hope and change. Because if you look at how things turned out, it has changed. Because, you know, I grew up in Texas, and I was talking to my mother on election day. And she said that there's been, you know, and I come from a small town where it's very much, like, there's still, like, a lot of, like, racial, like, things going on, and it's still a very backwards place. And she said for the first time she, like, went there, and she wasn't the youngest person, because it's usually a very, like, geriatric demographic. And so then she was there, and there were people who were, you know, 18-year-olds voting for the first time, and, you know, and people, you know, of every ethnicity and color, and, like, people who were immigrants, and, you know, and she said that there was this whole, like, older generation who were the normal,
regular voters. I definitely
thought
what you said was interesting about how in the next three elections that Texas might become a Democrat.
Oh, yeah. I was talking about that. Well, because that's the thing, is if you look at Texas demographics, they're going through a radical shift right now, because on election night, I looked at that only 50
7% of the state went for Romney, which is actually low for Texas going Republican after, obviously after the Bush years. Bush was the, you know, governor of Texas, so Texas was very pro-Bush. But the thing is it dropped significantly. I was like, what's going on here? And so I looked up the demographic shift, and, you know, and so now it's really exciting to think about how the Latino community in Texas is now the majority. They comprise 50% or more of the population. Yeah, and so, and they tend to vote Democrat because obviously they're not going to vote for a party that's saying, oh, yeah, just leave, you know, just like, just
get
leave
out.
The
right.
country.
Yeah,
like,
no,
that's
definitely
intolerant
not.
And unacceptable. And so, and so now it's interesting to think, you know, that as if we you know, let, like, every voice be heard and empower all these voters who had been, like, told for so long, like, you shouldn't vote, you're Latino, and all this, you know, they're, you know, and they, you know. And so, now they're getting empowered and going out and voting, and it's such a wonderful thing to see.
This is so, so exciting. And I totally agree with you, like, that the demographics are changing, things are changing, but I, like, it almost makes me feel a little bit skeptical that I'm getting so hopeful that things are changing. I mean, even the fact that all these wonderful, empowered women won places in the Senate and things like that, like, in this past election, it's just, like, I love that things are changing and they seem like they're changing for the better, but I'm really worried. It also makes me really scared that things are going to backtrack at any point. You know what I mean? And I don't know if that makes a lot of sense, but, like, we can have all this hope and make all these predictions about changing demographics and stuff, but then there are all these kind of underhanded things that happen in politics that keep this seeming progress and kind of put it to a halt. And there are so many people with money, like, with a lot of money, who want to keep that money and who want progress to not continue because they want to keep that money, and
then
they disguise that with, like, traditional values, and we want to maintain traditional values
If I can jump in here, the thing that's wonderful about, you know, how this country is set up is, yeah, they have a lot of money and they want to keep that money, but the thing is at the end of the day, their vote counts just as much as anyone else's, and that we have, like,
and
that's the thing is, you look at, I can't remember his name, but he donated, like, $30 million, and didn't get it.
Actually, I really like that point, because you're talking about ever since the Supreme Court passed the ever since the Supreme Court what was his name? The thing about super PACs, the corporation.
I know what you're talking about.
No, I know, but it really bothers me that I can't remember the name because my dad's, like, writing a book on it. Oh, goodness. Okay, whatever. That's not the point. So the Supreme Court said a corporation is a person, and now all these corporations can have super PACs, which means that they can spend as much money on a campaign as they wanted. And all of these super PACs, these really, really, like, pro-Romney super PACs, put millions and millions and millions of dollars into this campaign, and it kind of, like, proved democracy to be successful, because it's, like, it's saying that, maybe these corporations poured tons and tons of money for Mitt Romney, but what did it do? It didn't win the election. So, I mean, I'm sure it angered these corporations, but it kind of made, like, it made me proud of their
Well, it's like, that's the thing. It's like, even though it's disproportional right now and how unfair it is about that they're able to spend so, that they have that sheer amount of money to spend to, like, affect people's voices and everything. But at the same time, like, we do have to have a system in this country where, yes, they still do have a voice, and that's how it works now. Until we can find a different way of working it, because I personally don't like, for example, what I would do, right, like, if I could change it, I would take out the anonymity of super PACs. That's a big thing that gets me going.
Oh, my God, there's so many screwed up things about the super PACs and what they're allowed to do.
If you really research, you can figure out who's donated what, but you have to do a lot of homework on it.
I mean, there's so many great things that are revealed on that, like, kind of show about the total craziness with the things that they're allowed to do. But, like, it also makes you wary of the fact that money is still such a huge, huge thing, and it does play a huge role in politics. And maybe super PACs didn't win Romney the election, but that doesn't mean that money is not, like,
which is such a hurtful
factor.
Thing that they didn't win in the election.
It's great.
That, you know, he had his however many billionaires behind him, and that he still lost because
and I totally
people
agree
who
with
don't
that
have
that.
Tons of money got out there and voted. And so I think to finish this all up, because it's looking
I think we're going
to
get out of here.
Shop closing pretty soon. Just to go back to your fear of how that you think that things might bubble, I would say that right now we are definitely in a time of great change and a very significant change, and that this only thing that can stop it is
for people to succumb to that fear that it's going to go back. And because what we have to do now, and it seems like simple to say, but it's actually a hard thing to do, is keep going, you know, moving forward with this hope that things will permanently be changed for the better.
Right. Well, that's the whole thing. Like, I definitely want to keep, like, moving forward and keep it. I do think we're in a period of great change. Like, just looking at all the results from this past election, not just with the presidency, but with all the other things that happened, it really puts you in a really good place. But, like, it doesn't make me think, like, things are over. Like, I don't want to slow down. That's the whole thing. I want to keep going because it kind of amps you up a little bit about change and about progress, but not in a way that you would want to be. Like saying, okay, well, I guess there's really not much else that we can do, in a way that's saying, okay, awesome, now what else can we do? So I guess we'll see what happens in this next
election. Exactly, that's the exciting thing. That's why, you know, we sit here having conversations like this. And, because it keeps us moving forward. And,
And you know what else? Like, I'm super excited about the next 4 Obama years because he is no longer in a place where he has to, like, fear about the next election getting reelected.
Definitely.
So he can do, I mean, there's still gridlock, obviously, in Congress, but, he can do a lot more than he could have in his last 4 years. And I'm really excited to see what change he's going to bring to Washington. Okay.
All right. Cool. Awesome.